Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast for our preview of the Brazilian Grand Prix. It is the Brazilian Grand Prix this weekend. Well, in fact, whilst we're filming this, practice has already happened. Sprint qualifying will be happening in a couple of hours' time. So we are very, very close to the weekend. It's a sprint weekend, so it means there's going to be lots of action on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I really, really do love Brazil. I think it's a great circuit. I feel like, for me, I wish it was the season finale because, like this weekend, anything can happen. Most particularly, weather is really going to throw things into the mix. It is set to be raining over the Saturday and Sunday of this weekend. Imagine if this was our season finale. Somehow, Lando Norris gets himself into the championship. Maybe even Leclerc gets himself a mathematical chance as well. And a little bit of rain just adds that unknown. Would be amazing.
Would love some rain. Wither the weather. Tall and tan and dark and lovely. The car from Ipanema goes driving by. And when it passes, it goes vroom.
Vroom, vroom.
Let's get into it. We're in Brazil, baby.
Let's quickly just wrap up what's happened in FP1 then. So we currently got Lando Norris, who is fastest in FP1. Oliver Behrmann stepping in the car for Friday. That's a big bit of news that's came out today. Kevin Magnussen's become unwell. But the fact that Oliver Behrmann gets another chance in the Haas again, you know, getting ready, I suppose, for 2025 with that team.
And he looks good. Like you said, Lando Norris was P1 and FP1. George Russell, P2. Ollie Behrmann, P3. Mm-hmm. I think we do often have to take free practice times with a grain of salt because teams are running different setups, different fuel loads. Like, you know, you'll have a free practice session where Williams will top out the session. You're like, what happened here? And you're like, oh, well, they were running like next to no fuel load. So the car was lighter. So, of course, the car was faster. And that just happens in free practice. So unless we know that all teams were running similar setups, similar fuel roads, same tire, it's this, that, or the third, you can't really take free practice results with that much weight, but still very impressive from Ollie Behrmann. We also know that Max Verstappen is getting hit with a grid penalty for the Grand Prix this weekend due to a power unit change. Will definitely change my predictions for top five, because right now he has a 5-place grid penalty for a power unit change. But should we get in to Brazil?
Let's do it. Give us your facts and figures. I know that you love to do your research before one of these, so come on, lay it on me. What does Brazil bring us?
Well, even though the race is officially referred to as the Sao Paulo Grand Prix, most of us refer to it as the Brazilian Grand Prix. I think similar situation to the Mexican Grand Prix up until a few years ago was considered the Mexico City Grand Prix. First Brazilian Grand Prix was in 1972, but the first time the Grand Prix was an official Formula One race was in 1973. It was at Interlagos from 72 to 77, which is in Sao Paulo, just outside Sao Paulo. It was then held in Rio de Janeiro at, I'm going to butcher this name, Jacarepaguá.
Okay.
Jacarepaguá.
Your guess is as good as mine.
To 89 from... I looked up many different pronunciations for it. I believe it's Jacarepaguá.
Okay.
In Rio de Janeiro, was in Rio de Janeiro from 78 to 89, then moved back to a revamped Interlagos circuit in 1990 and has been held there since at the Autódromo José Carlos Pace.
Do you know where the name Interlagos comes from? My fun little fact
because
for you.
It means between two lakes.
Exactly. It is between two lakes, and that is why we get the random rain. Weather that we get, because obviously the rain evaporates from those lakes and then it sprinkles onto the circuit. So yeah, I like that. It's a nice little fun little fact.
It's a fun little fact. It is a fun fact. And we've gotten rain at 9 of the Grand Prix at Interlagos, so very prone to rain at this track. Many people refer to it as like a top 5 Formula One circuit. Many people who rank that like their favorite tracks or favorite circuits, it's either in the top five or just outside of the top five. Where do you put, do you hold it in the same regard, Hayden?
I think so. Yeah. I think, as I say though, as a season finale, it just has thrown up so many incredible season finales from when I've been watching Formula One, which is obviously the early, you know, noughties, sorry, the late noughties, early 2010s. And, you know, 2012 Brazilian Grand Prix stand out for me. Incredible race. You know, Sebastian Vettel being spun around and then being able to come back through the field. Lewis Hamilton as well in 2008 with the famous Is That Glock moment. And both of those things that had in common was just a little bit of rain in those races to add to the unpredictability. So I think Brazil is up there, not just because it's a great circuit, it's fun to drive. It's got a good recipe for what makes a good circuit, but also the unpredictable of the weather. That's, I think, is right. A huge element of the circuit as well.
For sure. Current drivers on the grid who have won at the Brazilian Grand Prix at Interlagos include Max Verstappen in 2019 and 2023, Lewis Hamilton in 2016, 2018, and 2021, and our boy Fred Flintstone, a.k.a. George Russell, in 2022. The entire track and pit lane has been resurfaced. I believe it was just resurfaced a few weeks ago, so it's still like a very fresh track. There's going to be two DRS zones, one on the main straight, and the other between turns 3 and 4. We also have a sprint weekend. So as Hayden mentioned earlier, we only had one free practice session. And in just a few hours, by the time you're probably listening to this, we'll have had the sprint qualifying. Just before we get into anything else, how does having a freshly resurfaced track sort of affect the drivability for all of the drivers on the grid?
It all depends on how well the resurfacing has been done. I know, obviously, for example, Turkey was a track that was resurfaced before 2010, and a lot of the oils were leaking out of the tarmac, making it very greasy, very slippery. So something like that could make the circuit a very, very difficult one to run on. But otherwise, it's potentially going to smooth out the bumps. Interlagos on the run down in towards turn one is incredibly bumpy, which, in all fairness, kind of makes it easier for the drivers, allows them to be able to feel the car underneath them, have more confidence on the braking, and be a little more settled going in towards that, you know, first corner, for example. Whereas beforehand, if it was a very bumpy circuit, they could hit a bump, it could unsettle the car, lock up a tire, and they miss the apex of the corner because of that. So potentially going to make it easier to drive around the circuit, but then at the same time means that we get better racing and we get drivers who are more confident to go for those overtakes.
As we mentioned before, this track is prone to rain. 9 races at Interlagos have been affected by rain, so it's often an equalizer at the circuit that provides for some very exciting races. Safety car is very common at the circuit. 14 of the last 22 Brazilian Grand Prix have featured a safety car. So 63% of the time, there's a safety car every time.
Okay. And when did we have one last season?
The answer is yes. We had a safety car on the first lap. There was a collision between Kevin Magnussen and Alex Albon, which eliminated both drivers from the race. Safety car called out immediately, led the field for 2 laps before a red flag was shown. So we did a standing restart last year. Drivers coming out of the pit lane for formation. Yep. So, yep, we had a safety car right off the bat last year.
Yep. And if we look at weather, I'm going to look at Google weather. Into Lagos. Rain. Well, it says a slight bit of rain. Well, that's not going to hit. That's going to be Saturday morning. So Saturday, midday to 3 p.m. So we might avoid it with qualifying, but there might be a little bit of a sprinkling, which I think is great for qualifying. I don't think you want it full wet because you could potentially have the same drivers there anyway up at the top, although it is an equalizer. But if you have mixed conditions at the right points of qualifying, I feel like you can be on the wrong side of a track drying up and getting quicker, and then unfortunately you lose out, or you make a mistake and you miss out on when the track's better. Or, you know, I think it can definitely spice things up. Sunday, on the other hand, though, looking like it's going to be wet from 9 a.m. all the way till 9 p.m. So we could have a wet race, which I'm very, very excited for.
I would love to see that. 71 laps, 15 turns. According to the Lights Out blog, 3 of the last 6 Grand Prix have been won by less than 5 seconds. From the last 10 races, the average win margin has been around 6.2 seconds. So sort of like when it comes to win margin, like gives Coda vibes. The driver who started from pole position has gone on to finish on the podium at Interlagos on 27 occasions, including all of the last 10 races. And the furthest back from the grid for someone to score a podium finish at the circuit is 20th, which happened in 2019 when Carlos Sainz finished third, having started from the back of the grid. Podium finishes from outside the top three positions of the grid have become increasingly common at Interlagos. A lot of that has to do with weather. Out of the last 15 podium finishes, eight have come from fourth or further back on the grid. So while qualifying is always very important, this track is more of a wild card where it's like anything can happen. So I'm very excited for this weekend. 18 races here have been won from pole, including seven of the last nine, while 30 have been won from the front row of the grid.
Interesting. Which is very exciting.
Pole sitters won eight of the last 10 races at Interlagos.
Yep.
Max Verstappen, of course, won last year by over 8 seconds with Lando P2, Fernando Alonso P3. We did have that safety car and the first lap with a red flag and a standing restart. But Brazil has given us some incredible races, one of which I would like to revisit right now, which was the 2003 Brazilian Grand Prix.
Yep, you sent me homework after the last the last podcast we did. I can confirm. I went back and watched it, and I want to say a big
thank you. Did you watch the whole thing?
No, I didn't watch the whole thing. I want to say a big thank you to Formula One themselves for uploading to their YouTube channel an extended highlights, 20-minute version of the race.
That's amazing.
So it literally perfect timing. I was like, beautiful, you've smashed it. Thank you very much.
That's amazing. But yeah, the 2003 Brazilian Grand Prix was one of the most insane Grands Prix in Formula One history. Let's talk about it. Exterior day, Interlagos, lots of rain. Just to give you some context here, broad strokes, only 54 out of the 71 laps were completed. There were five safety cars and 12 cars either crashed or suffered mechanical issues. It was absolutely insane. This was one of those weekends where there was a lot of rain. There were drainage issues at the circuit. And after a 15-minute delay, they finally started the race behind a safety car for the first eight laps, which is so weird. Like, in recent history, have you seen a race that started behind a safety car like that?
Oh, I mean, yeah. Belgium, 2021. I think we had one in Monaco, maybe 22. I think we had Monaco that started under safety car for quite a while. I feel like it's more common now because the wet weather tires are useless. They've chuck up way too much water. The ground force effect cars also chuck up way too much water, meaning that full wet conditions are no longer drivable because there is absolutely zero visibility. So as soon as then they basically go out, dry the track on the wet tires with the safety car, and then as soon as they feel like we've done a good enough job to go on to intermediates, then the safety car comes in, everyone switches to inters, and away we go. So I feel like it's a common thing nowadays in Formula One.
Yeah. But the race started on a safety car, and over the course of the race, turn three, also known as the Curva do Sol, started to cause cars to aquaplane, spin out, and crash. If you watch the highlights or the race recap like Hayden did, you just see it happen every like one or two laps. In almost the same exact spot, these cars aquaplane, spin out, and crash. On lap 25, you had Montoya and Pizzonia. On lap 27, you had Michael Schumacher. Lap 31, Joss the Boss Verstappen, Hayden's boy. I'm just kidding. Lap 33, Jenson Button, actually Hayden's boy.
That is my boy.
And on this day, the Curva do Sol was making them pay the troll toll to collect the car souls. Do you know that reference?
Pay the toll, the troll.
The troll, toll.
So
troll,
it's a tongue twister that I could, yeah, it's from a, like a...
Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
No, I was thinking of like a kid's kids book where, you know, there's a troll
no.
on the bridge and you've got to pay a toll. Well,
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Danny DeVito's dressed as a troll. And he's mispronouncing the word boy's soul. Okay. So he's like, you got to pay the troll toll if you want to get the boy's hole. And they're like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, you're saying boy's hole. He's like, no, I'm saying boy's soul. Anyway, regardless, lap 45, Ferrari's Ruben Barrichello briefly took the lead in his home race. And after a lap or so, as Barrichello was pulling away, he ran out of fuel and had to retire from the race. Lap 54, Mark Webber lost control of his car and crashed. And like an explosion at a cheese shop, there was a lot of debris.
I already read this in the notes, and I already shaking my head before you finished it. I saw that. I was like, I'm pretty sure you used that joke in the podcast.
I've used it twice. I've used it twice already since we started this. This caused another late yellow flag, and a safety car came out for a fifth time. Fernando Alonso of Renault, then running P3, didn't notice yellow flags, hit one of Mark Webber's loose wheels, causing him to have a huge crash in the barrier. This was like a really nasty, scary crash. Mm-hmm. This crash caused out a red flag to come out, and with 75% of the race completed, the race was called early. At that time, McLaren's Kimi Raikkonen thought he had finished P2, but then was informed he won the race. And Giancarlo Fisichella, who is driving for Jordan, thought he won the race, but yeah, he actually ended up winning P2. So he was celebrating, and then all of a sudden he was like, similar to when Massa thought he had won the championship.
Yeah, yeah.
So Fisichella was like celebrating, and then all of a sudden they were like, actually, you didn't win the race, you got P2. Podium only had two drivers on it because Alonso was immediately transported to the hospital after his crash. But that wasn't over because a few days later, F1 lead official Charlie Whiting informed the FIA about a timekeeping error. And after a hearing, Jordan's Giancarlo Fisichella was declared the winner of the race, not Kimi, which brought us to the exchange of the trophies the next season.
Yeah.
In, where was it? Bahrain.
Bahrain, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they did like a little photo op moment where they swapped the trophies. What was also insane is that the winning car, Fisichella's Jordan, caught fire while in Parc Fermé. It was just like, this race was like absolute utter chaos.
Yeah.
When you went back and watched the extended highlights, like, what were sort of your impressions?
Well, it's definitely one that I have known of over the years, and I've definitely watched various clips of it. I probably have watched it. I wish I had watched the full race and had the time to watch the full race back, because there's a clip or a moment in my memory of being a kid and watching Formula One when walking through the living room when my parents were watching it, or just sitting down for a moment, where there were drivers sat on stairs because their cars were out of this race and they were just sort of sat there glumly looking, and then it pans back to the action. I kind of want to feel like it was this race because of that, you know, that turn three incident and the Curve de Sol where all those cars had gone off. And I believe Michael Schumacher was one of them. So I feel like it was once he went off, because he went off just after Montoya and the other driver, Pisonia, was it?
Pisonia.
When they went off the track. So I feel like that could be that image. It might be a different circuit. Yeah. Someone might correct me. I really want to know where that's from, because I remember it so well from my childhood. It's so weird that is a memory of Formula One that I have in my head, which is drivers just sat on some stairs after they've crashed out. But yeah, I mean, it's just a chaotic race, but those are the sort of races that we love every now and again in Formula One, where shit hits the fan and everything's just going on and you have everything. And those are the races that you're like, to a new F1 fan, you should have watched that one. Like, that's the one to get you into Formula One, because then everything is there. And then, you know, next week they can tune in for the boring one and be like, what on earth is this that you've got me? By that point, it's too late.
Yep.
They're hooked. They know who the drivers are. They've already fallen in love.
You could take those clips of people aquaplaning and crashing on turn three and add like the Benny Hill theme, and yeah, it would fit perfectly.
Yeah. It's crazy when you watch that, because the safety standards then to now have changed, obviously, drastically. Like, you wouldn't have marshals getting a car off the circuit in that position in wet conditions as well.
Yeah.
Under normal racing conditions. Now, I'm sure there was definitely going to be yellow flags and probably also double wave yellows, but there was not a safety car until after Michael Schumacher had crashed out there and obviously gone into a barrier where there was marshals trying to get cars out, which they, you know, thankfully were aware of it, was able to jump back over the barrier and no one was hurt, I believe, from that incident. But it's just crazy how, you know, watching Formula One back then, or a few years later for me, and you think, oh, the safety of the sport is amazing. And then 20 years later, you look back on it and you're wincing a little bit, being like, oh, I don't know. So it'd be interesting to see how I watch Formula One now, when it's 20 years time, looking back on it and thinking of what safety standards we have then in the future, compared to what we have currently now and what we have learned from, of course.
What sort of safety standards do you think could be introduced in the future that we haven't even thought of?
That's the problem. I feel like that's
besides
the problem.
Besides Lakitu from Mario Kart in a cloud.
Well, yeah, I think that's going to be needed when we go to that track in Saudi Arabia. They are going to need, you know, a big fishing rod as soon as it shoots off the end to whip it back quickly before it's hit the ground. But it's unpredictable, I feel like. And Formula One is sadly very reactive. That some things are predictable, for sure. Yes. And Martin Brundle did say it once before, and I think it was the German Grand Prix in Nürburgring, where lots of drivers aquaplaned off down in towards turn one and just kept on flying into the gravel trap. And there were big tractors on the track trying to rescue these cars whilst other cars were still flying in. And he said, you know, we're going to have a nasty accident one day, but no one took that seriously. And you can completely understand. It's the same thing with the Halo. No one liked the Halo when it was introduced. I'm fully in that side, in that camp of did not like the Halo when it was introduced, thought it was stupid, we don't need it. And then a couple of races even into the season, you looked at Formula One and the instance that happened, you've gone, thank God we have the Halo, and thank God that I was wrong, because it's such a fundamental piece now of these cars and the safety of the sport. So sadly, Formula One is reactive, and you sometimes can't always predict what is going to happen or what you can counter until it's sadly already happened. And that unfortunately has been the case with many incidents in Formula One.
Did you see the photo op of them all
cramming
into that giant helmet?
Yeah. I mean, Vettel at a circuit always is the gift that keeps on giving, because obviously he went to Japan and they were all painting bee huts down at turn one, and then he's just waving
bee hotels.
Bee flags down at turn one, which is just like so random. This guy was a Formula One driver a couple of years ago, and now he's making bee huts, and you know, he's made a massive Senna helmet out of recycled plastics.
At this point, I feel like he's just trolling all the drivers. He's like, how many like silly photo ops can I get these drivers to do?
But the thing is, he would have hated the people in those positions directing him, oh, we're going to get this camera, come over here, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. And now you watch the videos, and he's that guy. He's literally so like, so if we could all be standing over here, please, and then the camera's over there, so we can be doing this. And it's like, it's crazy how it's changed. And, you know, I'm glad that he is still doing what he loves and doing an incredible thing. I do miss him thoroughly, and we get these great opportunities now where, you know, he's back at the grid at Sao Paulo, and obviously he was there at Japan this season. But we all want more of Sebastian Vettel. I think we can all agree. We all want more of Sebastian Vettel, more of these things.
Agreed. Could you imagine Sebastian Vettel trying to direct Kimi Raikkonen to paint
I think I think if there was anyone to direct Kimi Raikkonen, it would be Sebastian Vettel, because they were good friends in Ferrari, and I believe they're probably still good friends now. I mean, you don't know what their lives are like, because they've both gone away from Formula One and they're out of the spotlight now. But they were good friends at the time at Ferrari, and Sebastian Vettel was like one of the ones that Kimi really got along with as a teammate. So I feel like genuinely, if anyone's going to get Kimi Raikkonen to do something he doesn't want to do, it will probably be Sebastian Vettel. Or he's taken off of Kimi Raikkonen's Christmas card list.
Maybe. He's like, I don't want to pay the B hotel. I have to take a shit. Cool. Should we get into predictions?
Let's get into our predictions of the weekend. Now, you made some changes to yours, you said, after Max got the penalty.
I originally had Max P2.
Okay.
I still believe in Max Verstappen, even though, you know, he has fallen off since McLaren has come to prominence in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
But with the five-place grid penalty, I think that might be too much for him to make up to podium, so I took him out of my top five.
Yeah.
Right now I have Lewis Hamilton P5, George Russell P4. You know, for me, Lewis, it's just like being to Lulu is the Salulu, and I believe in Lewis Hamilton. I'm putting him in my top five. George Russell is a little bit of recency bias, because he did win in 2022, and the Mercedes, despite not being on par with the McLarens or the Ferraris, had a decent outing at Mexico, finishing P4, P5. So that's why I have them there. I have Carlos Sainz P3, Lando Norris P2, and Chuck Leclerc.
Okay.
AKA Charles Leclerc P1.
Interesting that there's no Max getting back in the top five, but also no Oscar Piastri in there as well.
No Oscar Piastri. I feel like, Oscar has struggled a bit recently, and, and I think the championship fight that's been going on recently has maybe distracted people from that. But yeah. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, like, you know, he had so much momentum and so much hype a few months ago.
Yeah.
And he's still performing considerably well, especially since he's still a very, very young driver. But given how competitive that McLaren is, I feel like he's dropped off just a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Damn. Oscar Piastri's dropped off big time. Okay.
I said a little bit. You said big time. I did not say big time.
Changed your words. Okay, interesting. I'm going to go... I'm stuck between my head and my heart on this one. I think I'm going to go with my head. And I'm gonna go on the basis that I believe it's going to be a wet weather race this weekend. I'm going to go with Lando Norris P1. Okay. And then I'm going to go Max Verstappen P2.
Okay.
And I'm still debating whether I actually switch that and put Max Verstappen P1 and Lando Norris P2. The reason I say this is 2016 Brazil is very much firmly cemented in my brain of watching Max Verstappen come through the field multiple times in the wet conditions. And that is, I think, the race that really cemented him as a talent to any doubters. Anyone who thought, nah, this guy's too young. He's not good enough. It's just all talk. That race was the race that everyone stood up, applauded, and was like, damn, this kid's the real deal. And that's why I just feel like the wet weather could swing it. Because it's an equalizer for the cars. It sets it, you know, a lot more even. And I feel like the ability of Max in the wet is outstanding. So do you know what? I am going to switch it. I'm going to go Max P1, which I hate to do because I want a championship battle. Then I'm going to go Norris P2. Then I'm going to go Charles P3, Piastri P4, and Lewis Hamilton P5.
Even with the grid penalty, you think Max is going to win this race?
I have seen that guy come back through the field in 2016 in a car. He overtook Nico Rosberg with an amazing overtake around the outside of the Curve de Sol turn 3, which was a car that was better than his. And I just feel like he has the ability in the wet. He is outstanding in wet conditions, and I think that could bring him back in. If it's dry, no, I don't think he's got a chance. But if it's wet, don't count him out.
Okay, and also, in my defense, Piastri's last two finishes were P5 in at COTA and P8 in Mexico.
Yeah, struggling qualifying last week.
I said a bit. I did not say big time. No, I did not say big drop-off.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. I think he had obviously a really bad qualifying last time around, but I think one bad result doesn't spoil the great season that he's been having.
No, he's had a great
season. And I just feel like that's for me, that's a flash in the pan rather than a small, slight drop off of momentum.
I mean, what do I know? I drive a Prius. I wouldn't survive 5 seconds in one of those cars. So what do I know?
You'd be hitting the brakes and your head would just be dropping down and you'd be struggling to pull it back up.
It'd be like driving on ice. I would immediately spin out just right from the jump.
Yeah.
Like if I ever play F1 24 and I'm like, let's turn off traction control. Let's like take off anti-lock brake. Let's take off ABS. Let's like take off all assist. And then I try to like hold the, I try to keep it in like, what's the RPM it's supposed to stay in when you're on the grid?
11,000, I think it is.
Yeah, I try to hold it in the right place. It's never in the right place. And then it start, and immediately from the starting grid, I spin out.
Yeah.
It's just like so embarrassing.
When you play F1, you're best friends with Barry R.
Who?
Barry R.
The barrier?
Yeah, Barry R. Barry R. That's his name. It's Barry R.
But yeah, I have to. I still have to play with almost all assists.
It's all right. We all started somewhere. One day you're going to be out there.
Hey, I started there and I'm going to stay there because I don't have the time. I don't have time to practice to get good at that thing.
Started at the bottom, and we're still at the bottom. That's
started at the bottom. We're still here. Stoddard at the bottom. We'll stay here. Anything else you want to talk about before we get into this very exciting weekend?
I don't think so. I'm very excited for it.
Yeah.
Sprint race weekend. I feel like sprint race weekend at Brazil was probably one of the better ones. And for me, has always been a banger sprint race. And is probably the main reason sprint races have held on for so long. Because we get to the end of the season, we're like, another sprint race, this is going to go badly. And then it comes to Brazil, we're like, actually, that sprint race was kind of good.
That's how I felt about China this year. Yeah, China was like, I usually don't like sprint races, but the sprint race in China was very, very good.
Yeah.
But usually they're not. Usually they're boring.
So yeah, this is where this one ends up being boring, but fingers crossed.
We'll see.
It's at least exciting.
I also want to say it's interesting that you are your generation of Formula One fans. I mean, I'm a new fan, so I can't really talk about this, but I'm going to anyway. Your generation of Formula One fans talks about how the season finale should be at Interlagos.
Yeah.
Where I feel like even older school Formula One fans feel like it should be at Suzuka, given the history in Suzuka's also a good one. Early 90s.
I feel like what Brazil has over Suzuka is a difficult track to overtake at. So the championship is, I say, more decided by qualifying. And it's very, very difficult. And especially in this modern day era of cars, which is, you know, just very difficult to overtake in general because they're far too wide, they're far too sluggish, they're far too big. Whereas Brazil has good racing, obviously has a very, very long run to turn one, has also great overtaking opportunity down in towards turn four as well. And I think that whole section complements each other because you can maybe go on the attack down in towards turn one and the driver ahead of you's gone defensive, so you set him up so that he goes defensive, so you get the switch back through turn one and then he goes defensive again through turn two, so you get the switch back through turn two and then you're right up behind their tail to get a fantastic slipstream and DRS down into turn four and make the overtake. So whereas Suzuka, you could argue maybe the same through the Casio triangle, the final chicane, then the run down in turn one, but I just don't feel like it provides as much as maybe Brazil does. So yeah, that's why for me, Brazil. But yeah, you know, I'm from a generation that did not watch any Suzuka finales, so I can't say I've lived them and say, oh yeah, I loved watching that. It's nostalgia for me. Brazil is nostalgia, and I have many, many happy memories watching F1 at Brazil for a season finale and trying to watch and figure out how it's going to finish.
One last question for you before we go into this Brazil race weekend. How familiar are you with the Tema de Vitoria, or the victory theme, also the Senna theme?
I don't think, not...
Bum ba da ba dum bum, boo doo doo bum, bum ba dum ba dum bum.
I feel like it's ringing a bell, but yeah.
It's the theme. So, like, it is. Most people associate it with Ayrton Senna. It was like synonymous as like the Brazilian Formula One theme in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
And it was originally written for the Brazilian broadcast and was supposed to be played exclusively at the Brazilian Grand Prix. And then they changed it, and Formula One decided that they were going to play it every time a Brazilian driver won a race. And so the first time it was ever played was for Nelson Piquet in the 1983 Brazilian Grand Prix. But in 1986, they started using it for every time a Brazilian driver won.
Mm-hmm.
But because, especially in the late 80s and early 90s, Ayrton Senna was so dominant, especially in his championship seasons in 88, 89, and 91, everybody associates the theme with Ayrton Senna.
Okay.
You should go listen to it. Okay. It's like, it's pretty awesome. Like, I feel like it definitely challenges the current F1 theme in regards of, I don't know, how hard it slaps.
Last question on this one for you. We're going off on tangents. We're extending this far longer than we expected. F1 theme, what for you is the best F1 theme song?
I don't know any of them besides that, the one I just mentioned and the current one.
Because for me, and this is nostalgia as well, watching it on the BBC before it went to Sky Sports, The Chain by Fleetwood Mac. think it's Fleetwood Mac.
They played the chain. That was the theme song.
The
oh my god!
That part. It started off with like dum, 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 dum.
That. How long was that? The F1 theme
from about I'd say 2009 till 2013. So it wasn't the actual F1 song, because you know how we have the official F1 song, but it was the BBC's version of the intro. Like,
listen to the wind blow, watch the sunrise.
It's none of that part. It's the part where the instrumental kicks in.
Oh, okay.
The and it gets
you. If you don't love me now, you will never love me again. I can still hear you say you would never break the chain. No, they don't play that part.
Yeah, they didn't play that part. Just the bass. Is it on the bass?
Boom. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
It was honestly, that gets me ready for a race, and that's what everybody wanted before the F1 theme tune was like dropped, and it was like no one knew what it was going to be. Obviously, I think the F1 theme tune is banging, and they nailed
it. It slaps. It's so good.
It is. It's so good. I wonder if they're ever. When they will change it, and things will always change, and it won't be there forever. When is its expiry date? How long are we going to have that as the theme tune until we get something new?
Give it a couple decades. You know what I want? Remember when we were talking about them potentially consolidating all of the livery reveals to like one big event at a stadium? Could you imagine having like a full Philharmonic orchestra performing the F1 theme to open the events for the fans?
But also,
like, how fucking
every
cool would
that be? Team has its own instrumental. You know how, you know, famous films and shows, like for example, let's go for Marvel, let's go Avengers, you have Captain America will have his own theme, sure. And Iron Man will have his own theme. So, you know, McLaren have their own theme, and Red Bull has their theme, and the teams can decide what sort of elements they want that theme to be. So, say Red Bull, you know, they're like, we want to be the villains. It's just a little bit of a darker, you know, a little bit more villainary tone. You know, I feel like McLaren, you know, want to be that happy, we're family sort of team, so it's a lot more lighthearted. Sure. And yeah, I think that would be quite cool.
And Haas is just a tuba going boom, 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 boom.
I like it. Right, I think that is a perfect way to wrap up this week's podcast for a preview of the Brazilian Grand Prix. Hopefully the Haases aren't making that noise over at the Haasai. Do we decide on what we're going to call it?
Haasai.
I think Haasai-able. I like Haasai.
Okay,
Haasai. Haasai, I think we like. We're going to stick with Haasai. We hope that they're not going to be sounding like that over the course of the weekend. We hope you enjoy it. Sprint shootout would have already happened by the time that you guys listen to this. So it's all going to be about the races over the weekend. But yeah, enjoy it. Make sure you're following on whatever audio platform you're currently listening to as well. Follow WTF1 official socials for all the latest news and gossip and everything you might have missed over the weekend of Formula 1. Make sure you check out James. There's incredible social content as well. And make sure you check out myself too. And we will see you in a couple of days' time after the Brazilian Grand Prix to review, hopefully, an amazing race weekend. Until then, enjoy it. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Ciao.